Russell Howard here. On this week's Wonderbox, we've got an old flatmate of mine. We've got the team captain of Cats Does Countdowns. We've got one of the stars of Meet the Richardsons. It's John Richardson. So I'm here with the fantastic John Richardson. John,
hello there.
Have we met before?
I think so, yeah. Well, in a different life.
Doesn't it feel like that?
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? How old are you now?
43. I remember you and me doing a photo of us in a tent at Six Music.
Oh, wow. We see, I don't remember that.
Very old. We look very old now compared to that. I had long hair.
Yeah, and I didn't have a bald spot.
Now, I'm excited about doing this.
Are you?
Because...
Oh, that's a soft table.
You're not somebody that everyone knows gets excited by stuff.
No.
I think you have a demeanour of a nitpicker of someone that finds fault in things. But I know otherwise. I know somebody that gets very, very excited about things. So that's why I know that you will select an eclectic range of things and they'll be peculiar.
Yeah, I'm on a real journey with enjoyment of life. Because someone else said that to me recently. I said, well, I'm not really an optimist. And they said, no, I think you are. I think you just don't know you are. And I certainly don't think I'm an optimist.
No, but you take joy in small things.
I do, yeah. And I think that's because I think the big things are all terrible. And yes. I think they're sort of linked. I think because I think the world is so awful and generally people aren't very nice to each other, actually when I do get something I like, I'm very grateful for it.
But I remember when you were living in Bristol in that little cupboard.
Shithole.
There was Paulo Coelho quotes all over.
Oh, yeah. But that was a cry for help that you didn't see. I was begging all of you to intervene.
Was that what it was?
Oh, crap. Even I look back now and I think someone should have phoned my mum or something. Like, just, you know, put under the door in the middle of the night.
That's a really good point. I should have written one of them that said, get out, mate.
Yeah. But there are other ways.
But that's what I mean. So there was always this interesting juxtaposition of fucking hell and that's right. That there was two combos of someone that hated traffic and got angry about...
What do you say of John Richardson in his 20s? He hated traffic, but he enjoyed the poetry of Lorca.
But that's what I mean.
Everyone's that. Aren't you that? Because I think about you now. You're known for your celebration of joy and wonder and the good things, but that's a secret admission that's because those things need to be celebrated because there's a great deal of other stuff.
I always want to say to people when they say that you only get grumpy. Watch that cunt on a trampoline. that's whenever...
Do you know, yesterday...
Watch that cunt on a trampoline. I'd say that to an old lady. he's terribly grumpy. Honestly, madam, watch that cunt on a trampoline.
Yeah, if she'd have seen me yesterday, she'd have seen me at an indoor inflatable park and then a trampoline. I double bounced yesterday.
Yeah.
We got back from the inflatable park. My daughter wanted to go on the trampoline. I said, fuck it, go on then.
Yeah.
I'll go on a trampoline with you.
And I bet you're gassy.
I guess it all the time.
That's what I mean, but a trampoline's going to really...
I tend to hold it in on a trampoline for fear of going too far.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Okay. You know, a fart at ground level on tarmac, you can control that.
A fart at ground level at tarmac is a great chapter of a book, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. I want to write another book. Didn't like the last one, but I can't think of anything to write. Got any ideas?
No.
You strike me as someone who's got loads of ideas for a book, but probably doesn't want to write one.
I can't think of anything worse than sitting down and trying to entertain myself. That's why I love stand-up, because it's so immediate that there's validation and a handheld, because the crowd laugh or they don't and you know the path you're on. Whereas, you know that thing where you've written loads of stuff and you think it's really funny and then you've entertained yourself and then you go, ta-da, and the crowd like... No.
Yeah.
And you realise it's a waste of an afternoon. That's
but you
the
don't
fear
get
I have
that
with
books because you never see them not laughing and then you just say, oh, that bit wasn't meant to be funny anyway.
It's such a beautiful relationship, isn't it, writing a book? But it's you are never privy to that moment that we have when there's just a sentence so magnificent that you shut the book and you're like, oh. But you don't know that as an author.
No, but you do now get... So someone, I wrote a book many moons ago and I didn't like it very much because I wasn't very happy when I wrote it, and I in interviews...
Can you cough a minute? Because it's fucking gravelly.
I think it's...
I don't know what you give... Like, that was really upsetting me.
Was it?
Yeah, it was fucking... I was like...
I thought it was a new thing.
Yeah, I was like, what's he doing?
I'm taking up Benson and Hedges again.
Yeah, I was like, you've been on the taps.
Yeah. But,
go on.
You wrote your book. I didn't write my book. I didn't like my book. I didn't like it. And I in an interview, I'll sort of say, oh, I wrote a book, but it's shit. And then somebody messaged me online the other day to say, I wish you'd stop doing that because there are people like me that really liked your book. And when you slag it off, it sort of shits on that feeling that I have. And it tells me that you didn't really mean the things you said in the book that meant something to me. Right. And it was a real slap across the cheek. And I thought, you're exactly right. Because I didn't mean the things I wrote in the book. And I did write them in order that they would have that effect on people.
What is the first thing in your Wonder Box?
The first thing I'm going to put in... And I've spoken about this lady before, but I don't remember us speaking about her. And I'm curious to know what you think.
Yeah.
Is Anna Nicole Smith, who features in the next series of Meet the Richardsons.
Happiest smile, I would argue, in the history of mankind. That old fella that she married when he was 93.
Yeah, that picture is... So there's a storyline in the next Meet the Richardsons where I'm always saying, do you know what, I wish I didn't get recognised and all that. So Lucy calls my bluff and I do full old person makeup. So they made me up to be... an 85-year-old man.
Which is your dream.
And Lucy sits on my lap, and then we replicate the picture of the old fella and Anna Nicole Smith.
Were you tempted to keep the mask on because it would mean that your brain and your body were finally in sync?
Yeah, well, that did happen. I was so comfortable. But for the horrific nature of having all that done.
Yeah.
You've had it done, haven't you?
I had it done, and as Dan can... a test, I had a meltdown.
Oh, you didn't like it?
No, I probably wigged out because they were all like touching me. Like,
yeah, they do have to touch you.
No, as in, so I was having this prosthetic put on my face, and then Steve Hall, Steve Williams, and Dan started like giggling and touching me, and I went mad and ripped it off and said, I don't like it. And we sort of had like a moment of silence, didn't we?
Yeah, but it didn't mean anything. There's nothing going on.
No, it's fine, isn't it?
It was fine.
Right.
Awful it was, really awful. I was screaming, I don't want to die, all this sort of stuff. And then we had to write some jokes about Brexit. It was a weird afternoon, man.
I was just on a train with Anna Soubry and I nearly spoke to her about Brexit. And I thought, I'll have a little smile at her, and if she smiles back, I'll say that. And I smiled at her and she didn't smile back, so I didn't say anything.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. You've got not resting bitch face, but resting gas face. So when you smile, it looks like you've just let one off.
And we weren't at ground level because of the train.
No, but you look like someone that farts a lot. So if you smile...
You think?
You're fucking right. But so when you smile, it's like, oh, dirty fucker, look at that. but you always look like when you smile, you're lifting up a cheek.
Yeah, I sort of always am. We're always on the verge, aren't we?
I think it's... I'm beginning to age. I'm feeling that.
Yeah,
you know that thing of like my knees going a bit, and it's very unsettling. Having always been kind of healthy, I was coaching my mate through a colonoscopy yesterday.
Live?
Not live. And there was nothing I could say other than it's gonna be awful. It's gonna feel like, you know, something terrible has happened to you in a doctor's surgery, and that's that.
Yeah.
And I'll see you on the other side, but you're gonna feel like you've been abused. And we'll probably have 10 of them for the rest of our lives.
10 if you're lucky.
10 if you're lucky, but honestly...
The more colonoscopies, the better in one sense.
Yeah, well, this is it. But it's the fact that they put a camera up there and it felt like my arsehole is the most...
Famous thing in the room at that point. Is that what it was?
But it didn't want any part of it. I would argue that I've got the J.D. Salinger of arseholes. That it just like, just leave me alone.
So what's your catcher in the rye then? What's your arsehole's great work that...
No.
I know I did that. No, but please, just some privacy, please.
It's not that. It's the privacy. I'm not saying it's exquisite. I'm not saying it's done good work.
It should be studied in schools.
I should have said, who's a good loner? That's what.
Hannah Hawkswell.
Who's this?
Oh, very good.
This your first thing you're putting in the Wonder Box?
First thing in the Wonder Box, Hannah Hawkswell. What do you know of Hannah Hawkswell? Anything?
No.
So she had the life that you want for your anus. Absolutely on her own, lived on a farm, run by her parents. Her parents died. All the family around her. So 200 years ago, it would have been all her family's owned little bits of land.
Yeah.
They all sold off, died, moved. And she was literally on her own. And she lived a life where she had a cow, it would have a calf. She'd raise the calf and sell it for 200 quid or whatever. And that would be her money for the year. And that would be the only time she saw... someone is selling the cow. She'd go into town every now and again. She got bread and butter delivered to a wall. And that was her life, all of it. And then she was on a documentary. She was like a Fred Dibner type. She was only meant to be a little snippet on a documentary about farms in winter.
Yeah.
And it went insane. And everybody just fell in love with her because there was something in her sort of soul and the life she'd led, and that she wasn't bitter, she wasn't angry, she didn't want anything. She was very calm and placid. She spoke beautifully, sort of North Yorkshire, slightly northeastern lilty accent.
So what do you love about her?
I love that she wasn't... I think at the time I got into her, early 20s, like people get into bands, I got into an isolated pensioner. And
which is a great sentence.
I was sort of willfully living that life of trying to be like Uranus. I just wanted to be on my own. Mm. Didn't want to be filmed.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do gigs and go home and be on my own and not talk to anyone.
So were you looking at this Hannah Hawkswell? How old was she when you...
Oh, so she would have... Well, hard to tell, really. I guess by then sort of 50s, 60s, but looked 80s because she lived in a house with no power or heating. I mean, she looked old. So it wasn't a sexual thing, Russell.
I'm not saying it was. Not saying for the slightest. But it was... I mean, it's also peculiar that it was a lifestyle thing, but we'll get onto that in a minute. So you were looking at this, let's say, 60-year-old mm-hmm. lady just battling the world, but... What was it that you... Did you find kind of like a solace in that?
Yeah, she was like a hero because she didn't... She sort of said, well, it would have been nice to have the other thing. There's a story in the book where she talks about... I think she died a virgin. And she talks about how there was a dance once when she was a teenager and she danced with a soldier who was back from the war. And there was a sort of connection between them and she thought, oh, this is going to be it. And then he got called away again and she never saw him again. And she's then not had that ever again, or anything even close to that. And she's mused on that for 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
And she's still all right with it. She's like, oh, well, you know, that who knows what that thing was. That might have been nice, but never happened. So, you know, I'm happy with what I've got. I like to go and stare into the dark reservoir at 2 a.m.
Is that what she liked to do?
That was one of her favourite spots, was at the bottom of the farm. She'd go out in the moonlight and look at how black the water was and... But it's not bullshit. It was a genuine, this is where my life is and I'm totally fine with it. And you can smell when someone's lying. I was lying. I was like, no, I'm fine with it. I like to do loads of gigs and then I go to Asda and I make food and I drink a bottle of wine and I have a little cry in the bath and it's all fine. Best place to do it.
Well, best place to cry.
And all your business. Yeah. Right, all left-handed.
Yep.
Jimmy Carter cuts his nails in the bath. I've never heard of that before.
Does he cut them or somebody come in?
I think nowadays.
Cut them, put them in the cupboard.
He says put them in the bath and then they go down the sink, but...
Here's the thing. Have you ever taken a phone call while you're in the bath?
No.
Yeah, people get funny about that. I remember Daniel Kitson losing his mind with me. I went, right, mate, how are you? And we were just chatting away. After about 10 minutes, I sort of moved. And he was like, are you in the bath? And I went, yeah. And he hung up immediately.
I wouldn't mind talking to you in the bath. I personally, if I was in the bath, that's the whole point of a bath is to not be on the phone.
Oh, no, it was great.
I'd have a chat to you in the bath.
Yeah.
We got tiling round or...
Yeah, yeah.
It's safe.
Oh, it was completely safe, yeah. No fear.
Not in one of those little things that goes across the middle, the little wire rack that you put the soap in.
You get those in the hotel divans, like you regularly have those ones that go across the middle and they've got a little mirror.
Yeah, overrated, aren't they?
What, a hotel divan? Are you crazy?
I think the most overrated chain.
Oh, get fucked.
What do you not think? Oh, this is a very middle-class chat.
Lovely, yeah.
Rather have a Premier Inn.
No, you wouldn't. See,
yeah, I would.
You're talking about smelling bullshit. That's an absolute lie. Stood here like you're Lenny Henry. What are you talking about?
There is a side of all that I'm willing to pay for. So I like a nice bar,
yeah.
And I like a nice room and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's but a point
where
you,
of those
you're paying for
where you
it.
Can sleep where a businessman's beat off.
Businessmen beat off in the duvan, mate.
Then they don't let him in.
You do sleep better in a Premier Inn. You must stay in Premier Inn.
Are you
Inns,
on
Dan.
The clock?
Yeah.
What's happening here? Is he... Nah, there's some sort of sponsorship going on here.
I'll tell you who'd enjoy a Premier Inn.
Who?
Hannah Hawkswell.
Oh, he's good, isn't he?
She wouldn't, because that would be a bit too modern.
She did,
she'd
off the back.
She probably cut up a goat and just lie in it.
It says here on the internet, after the documentary, she got famous, went wild, died in Vegas.
Well, I know where she died because I went to her house while she was alive.
I'd have fucked you.
It wasn't about that.
No. But
I drove to where she lived while I was writing the book, actually. She'd retired to like a village and I drove and I thought, I'll just see if she walks to the post office and I'll just say hello to her.
Oh, okay.
And I parked outside her house for about a couple of hours before I realised she's probably not going to come out while there's a guy parked outside her house staring in her living room window.
Exactly. Dressed as a soldier to trick her. So what do you like the fact that she was comfortable in her own skin?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And all that projection of, oh, I bet you wish you had this, though, or I bet you wish you'd been there. And actually, I don't think people could handle that she genuinely didn't want any of that. Even not having done it or seen it, she wasn't bothered. There wasn't a bitterness. There wasn't an anger. Very stoic about the life she'd had. The connection to the land and her family and that she felt being in that farm meant more to her than all the other stuff. And she'd had time to weigh that up. That wasn't like she'd had fucking time. No telly.
So presumably when you fell in love with the idea of her, you were a very different person to who you are now.
Yeah.
So do you now look at her differently? Do you look at her now and think, God, if only that soldier had come back?
No, and I think that's what's nice about her, because I don't think that, because I think it would be easy to think that. And I do think she sort of had the life she wanted, and it wouldn't be the one you'd pick for her, but it's no one else's business. What I think, there's that feeling of like, but you must have wanted all the things we've got because we all need them and want them. Mm. So if you don't need it, then maybe I don't need it. And I think that's what I like about her, that sense of, no, I really was really happy with a loaf of bread and some butter a week. She had to tie her bread to the rafters of her house so the mice didn't get it. And it never occurred to her to move or like block up some holes.
So you just admire the fact that she made peace and was happy.
I think it's reassuring, because when you watch the videos, and I would recommend people just have it, you'll see it immediately. You will see in Hannah Hawkesworth, you will see immediately when she talks, there's a glint in her eye, there's a youthful voice and a happiness to the way she's talking that is totally alien to her surroundings. And you can just feel it immediately. And I would say her and Jake Thackeray, I remember being in my sort of late teens, early 20s and flicking through the channels and being arrested by something that probably isn't meant for you, but somebody starts talking and you can't.
Mm.
And I sort of hope she'd, because I put her in the Museum of Curiosity when she was still alive.
Yeah.
And I know she listened to Radio 4, and I thought, I wonder if she knew that I'd done that. And I hoped she didn't. And most of the time, you know, you talk about footballers on stuff and you secretly think, well, they know I said it and then they want to be my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
With her, I genuinely thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't talk about her because I don't want her to not be able to enjoy that half an hour on Radio 4.
Right.
Because I've brought her into it by mentioning her. And it's very rare you feel that sort of protection for someone.
What's next?
Oh, next. Oh, mate. And this guy.
Oh, Bielsa.
Marcelo Bielsa,
what's he got in his hand?
A grenade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why has he got a grenade? Not known for warfare.
Well, he did once when he was in Argentina. Some things had been said about him in the press.
Okay.
And the journalists sort of created a situation where some fans came to his door very angry, and Bielsa came out with a hand grenade.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah. Some say that's where he got the nickname El Loco. He's threatening his own fans with a hand grenade.
That would do it.
I don't think he'd do the grenade thing now.
No.
But, you know, when he was young, he talked about losing a game. He turned to another player on the plane and said, you know, when we lose, do you wish you were dead? And the other player went, not really, no.
Just eating like them pretzels you get. just go on,
you
really
should probably speak to someone. But Marcelo Bielsa...
See, most people know him, certainly in the UK, they know him from his brief time at Leeds. Sitting on a bin, you know, high-intensity football.
You made him sound like a sort of vagrant there.
Potty. No, but, you know, but like sitting on a bin.
Bucket.
Teams, bucket, sitting on a bucket, you know, teams playing really high-intensity football,
mm-hmm.
getting sort of shagged out by about January and then sort of scraping to the end of the season.
I mean, we could talk for hours.
But always fun on Match of the Day. I had that little fella that spoke for him.
Yeah.
Which could have been you.
You don't think I didn't try.
Exactly.
I went from, as a kid, going to Leeds games in a shirt thinking I might get a game here, to going to Leeds games thinking, maybe you need a translator. How can I express from the West Stand that I can speak Spanish?
I would have loved that. Can you imagine that? Of just like Bielsa just chatting away in Spanish and then you just holding up a grenade.
He says, back off, Gav. Do you want some of this, Gav Clucks, you piece of shit?
And Bielsa looking at you and go, that's not what I said.
Well, he could speak English, so they say.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
What Poch used to do at Southampton, wasn't
it?
He sort of continued it for longer than he should.
Shut down the debate.
So what is it you love about Bielsa?
I mean, just everything really outside of what you just said people would know about him. So obviously, as a football fan, you want your team to play well and you want them to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more you want that it's never really spoken about, that you want your club to be liked and you want them to stand for something.
Yes.
And you want football to stand for something. And he was all that. And he made me feel about football the way I felt when I was 12. Yeah. And I used to draw pictures of players and send them into the club.
Yeah.
That all came back, that sense of, I'm allowed to be passionate about this again, because I knew they weren't going to let me down. Individual players might go rogue,
yeah, yeah,
but the ethos around the club at that point that he insisted upon,
yeah,
from that first day he came in, he made the players litter pick, for the amount of time that it took to save up the money for an average fan to buy a ticket, that was a day one. You now understand that this club only exists because of the fans and is for the fans.
Yeah.
And that just made you feel sort of cradled as a fan that, oh, he's looking out for us now. So yeah, no result matters more. There's individual moments that you can point to, but as just a comfort that, mm, oh, he gets it, that football isn't really a thing. And that's a man who would want to kill himself if he lost, but he still understood that football only exists as part of a world,
mm,
in which fans pay to see football because life is hard. Mm. And there's so much under the surface philosophy of understanding. He's into movies and he's into politics, and all that feeds this idea that football is amazing because of all that. And people always say, oh, but it doesn't really matter, does it, about football? And that I think is a fundamental misunderstanding of football. It's that fans know it doesn't matter, and that's why it matters.
Yeah. If you've gone through a period where your club has become tainted, or there's been scandal, and then somebody comes along and like reinvigorates it, it's incredible. And then you get to sing the hymns, you sing the songs, you start noticing who's coming through the youth squad. And it feels like, it's so funny, isn't it? It's in those moments of litter picking, or when you hear a story that Klopp at Liverpool made all the players know the name of everyone, from the dinner ladies to the youth teams, so that in those moments make you want to belong.
Yeah.
And it's the belonging. I think that's why people struggle with politics, because there's so many great leaders in football. And we know what a great leader looks like, whether it's Bielsa or Guardiola or Klopp or Ferguson or Wenger or
Warnock.
Or Warnock.
Holloway.
Holloway. But we know what a galvaniser looks like, somebody that can fix a broken thing and talk a certain way. It's really like when you look at someone like Rishi Sunak or even Keir Starmer to a degree, that they don't have that same kind of energy. I really love doing the show because it's a real, and obviously we're mates and that, but it's such an excellent analysis of people, isn't it? So the two things you've put in thus far, so, Hannah and Bielsa, that they have a, oh, imagine those two fucking, you'd lose your mind.
Like, I would now.
But like, but pre, before she died.
Yeah.
I mean, that is El Loco, isn't it? Take me to the fridge. But the...
I don't have one.
Yeah. But if you had, just put it in the lake. That's why I'm staring. I'm trying to find me milk. But...
Do you know, they wouldn't have been far off neighbours for a while, because he was Weatherby, she was Middleton.
Yeah, imagine those two meeting in Co-op. But I'm in for a bucket. Well, but...
He shopped in Morrison's famously, but I'll let it slide.
But the point I'm making, it's that clearly you have an obsession with perfectionists and, or like the people that are trying to... you have an obsession with purity, is what I would say.
Oh, I can't wait to discuss the next one.
No, but all right, fine. But thus far, that's what I think. Like, you love people that stick to their thing and they do it to the best of their ability, and they're not looking for, but they're not looking for fame. They're not looking for anything beyond their skill set.
Okay. Well, yeah, you have perfectly teed up my third choice. It's a very different realm, but I would say that sentence applies no less to the Ranch House pub in Morecambe.
Okay, well, there you go. It's a similar thing, isn't it?
It is,
because
yeah,
it's clearly going to be some... two-bit shithole. And, you know, they've probably had offers. Let me see if I can guess. They've had offers to become a chain and they've turned it down because they only serve 12 people. Then if one of them dies, then they'll serve their kids and that's it. Am I close?
Well, sadly, the ranch house is no longer there.
Right.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
But the ranch house was my dad's local.
Okay.
And it's on the seafront in Morecambe.
Yeah.
And it was part of Frontierland. So when I grew up in Morecambe, Morecambe was thriving. It had a water park, which I remember telling you about on the radio show. It was called Bubbles.
Yep.
And you said it sounded like an old lady that used to spit at kids.
I'll tell you what, it's great when you get to enjoy your previous work.
Yeah. And then you did the voice, I can remember. I am Bubbles. We haven't changed a lot, have we? The same people are still in there.
But what is it about this pub?
So it was part of, as I say, a sort of 90s Morecambe that was, you know, a seafront town with a theatre and a water park.
1890s or 90s?
Well, the ranch house was very 1890s. Mm. So this was a Wild West theme park with a mine train and all that. And then, it, like everything in Morecambe, it was shut down and taken away, not replaced with anything, because why would you leave people with stuff to do when you can just fucking leave them there? So Frontierland went, Bubbles went, everything went. The festival stopped coming, WOMAD stopped coming, all that. But the ranch house got left because it was still a going business. Sort of theme park then became a wasteland. So if you walked along Morecambe Seafront, you had sort of Aldi and things like that. Then you had just an abandoned wasteland of nothing. And out of nowhere, a Wild West themed pub just stood on a basically a landfill site. And it went on for years because it was such a... You walked in through the saloon doors inexplicably. Nobody ever questioned why it was like that.
Audi partners. Just, I love that. It's like they're all just a bit broke, but it's still going. And did your dad dress as Cotton Eye Joe when he went, or...?
I mean, there was a slight... He favoured... he might have worn a cowboy boots. He loved a tasselled shirt. I'm sure he had a cowboy hat at some point. You know, there'd be various people in there in various stages of the cowboy attire as it's progressed into the 21st century.
Howdy, bastard.
Exactly.
Rootin' tootin' John Smiths.
Just a fucking arrow in their head. Oh, bloody hell, time I've had.
But it was full of those people who... It was absolutely a community of friends, but who could only communicate via the most horrific abuse. Nobody would ever say anything nice to each other. It was it was known that that was a compliment, but when you walk in a pub and someone says, fucking hell, here we go, what that means is, my mate's here.
Yeah,
comes out is, you can fuck off. And it was like that from the minute you walked in to the minute you would leave.
That feels like that should be like a British version of Cheers. Do you remember that? Like that. And you're like,
it
Norm.
Wouldn't be called Cheers.
Yeah, fuck up. But that's what I mean. But it's that lovely thing of, but you're so right. It's that, it's the ribbing, isn't it? Oh, fucking hell, here we go.
Yeah.
This bastard's here.
Yeah, that's it. No one else is getting around bought for him till this prick leaves.
Did you ever go in there?
Yeah, so there was...
And what did they say to you?
I do a gig
fucking
every...
Fucking here comes fancy bollocks from London town.
Well, they just talk about my dad, because they don't...
Right.
Much like Marcel Bielsa probably doesn't know what's going on in comedy. Hannah Hawkswell didn't. The ranch house is its own bubble, and it exists in and of its own world. So the stories are about things that have happened in and around the ranch house. And there was a couple of years where I do a gig every year in Morecambe. The acts would stay in the hotel over the road, and then after the gig, we'd go back to the ranch house. And I think... I know Angela Barnes has been in there. I think the first couple of years before it shot, I was never prouder of like Morecambe than knowing that a lot of those acts might have driven past and they probably would have written a joke about it on the way to their gig. Mm. But then having sort of been in there, nobody bought a drink. Everyone would buy rounds for the comics and just talk, you know, as if it was... Not necessarily ask about comedy, but just talk shit as if you were in a pub. And it's the sort of pub that I know some people wouldn't want to go in. And then when you do go in, you realise, oh, these people are fucking brilliant. They're hilarious. The landlord and landlady still run a pub around the corner, and the same people are there, and it has the same feel, but it's just not in a Wild Western themed pub in the middle of a landfill site. So it's lost some of that external appeal.
Been in the Native American. It's all right.
We went woke. We had to go woke.
You don't sound unlike Rob, the landlord.
What did they say about your dad?
Oh, it's mainly drinking tales that probably aren't mine to tell. Okay. But yeah, as he's got older, you know, the relationship changes slightly, and we'd sort of tend to now, I'll drive up and we'll take my daughter and we'll maybe have a walk along the prom and we'll watch my daughter play, and it's you're then the son and the father, and it's all,
yeah,
you know, it's a different sense of emotions as it was. And I know I would have played on the same, because we do that same walk from my dad's flat in the West End down the prom to the ATP Double Burger Bar and back. And now I do it as the dad, but then I see my dad, and sometimes it's quite emotional. And then sometimes my dad will just hold out his arm as if across the bay, looking across to the Lake District, so an unparalleled view, but actually signalling to the benches. And he says, I've fucking slept on all these. Hammered. And it's stuff like that. And you just think, oh, right.
Presumably your daughter's like, oh, yeah.
She's building a sandcastle.
Oh, she's not privy to it.
She's just, she's
quietly off. I thought
he was
telling her.
No, I think my dad's about to say something. And he does very often say, look at that view, because there are many beaches. But in Morecambe, you're looking across the bay to the Lake District. So not only with Seaside, you've got that view. It's unlike anywhere else in the world, and it's absolutely stunning. And behind you is a Wild West saloon. I mean, what is there not to like?
But it's so fascinating, because, like, I'm drawn so much more to the, I've slept on every one of these benches.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Than I am a view. Like, I struggle with views. Like, it's one of those things. Like, if I'm told to like, or look at this, yeah, fine. But if somebody... I remember one of my uncle's mates holding up a pint of sort of really orange cider when I was about probably 12 and going, I could drink three of these, kill you, and not know I'd done it. And that was the thing for me. Like, I those stories of kind of drunken excess and mania.
You're right to have a different focus when someone says that.
Yeah,
I think it probably is time to stop looking at the view. When someone says that, keep one eye on them.
Sure. Well, that's
just like, give them a glance. Two of them for him, no more.
I don't know. I've always, I'm aware that makes me peculiar, but I'll look
You're
at
a city, though, aren't you? You like bustle and people and.
Yeah, I do.
You don't like a bath. Don't think you like the silence.
I don't like the silence.
How do you go to sleep?
With the West Wing on.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
You need a reservoir at the bottom of your garden. Just have a wander down.
No,
but
again, it's so interesting because I don't know. I'm such a fixer, but I like the idea of trying to help her. Just find, like, I don't know, one of the extras from Last of the Summer Wine or something, so they can understand each other. Put them both in a bath, something. Just push them down a hill because I'm a fixer. Like,
but that doesn't strike the. But the whole point is that is a situation that doesn't need to be fixed.
No. But I
in that situation, I would say you're actually tearing down.
No, I'm not. But I want her to experience an orgasm. I'd love that. And right. Like, as in,
she may well have.
No. Yeah, true. And I bet she barely left herself alone. Do you know what I mean? Like when the chase was on.
I mean,
but I'm sorry. Listen, what I'm saying is, you are happy with them being as they are, whereas my brain's like, oh god, like I want her to meet that soldier. I'm not happy with that. And that's what I don't know.
Yes,
I don't
but know do what you I'm not think say. She might have been less happy with the soldier?
No, but at least then she would know that that it wasn't for her. That she would have had that kind of night with him.
You never get to know, though, do you?
No, but I just
because maybe it's someone else.
I just, you know, remember the TV show Quantum Leap.
Of course.
So I wouldn't mind doing that and then leaping inside her and then just having a mad weekend. Like, give me
and then leave her.
Yeah.
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 So to pick up the pieces she comes to on Monday morning.
Yeah.
What the fuck? No roof on her house. The dog's been made up. She's got eyeliner on.
What's happened, dear? But
the idea that you ever get to leap out, that Ziggy goes, yeah, no, you've nailed that. This is exactly what you wanted.
No.
Wasn't the whole thing that he sorted them out and then he got to go back to his life?
Yeah.
You'd have still been there. Ziggy would have been like, Ziggy says, fucking sort this out, done. She's crying.
Yeah, hang on. Just take the batteries out of Ziggy for a bit and let me fix this. Just give me 5 minutes, Al. But give me a weekend and then at least she can be me for a weekend. We'll swap. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so what is it that she's going to do to you then? Because when I hear you say, I can't look in a reservoir or be quiet or have a bath,
yeah,
that's my right. I need to get in you for a weekend. make it so you can have a bath in the dark and go to sleep without the telly on.
That is an interesting thing, and it's sort of that thing of the utter pointlessness of life. So then what I have to do...
is a podcast called Wonderbox.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But I have to do stand-up, and I have to I have to find a way of distracting
80?
Myself.
You're still going to do stand-up when you're 80? I think I'm nearly done.
Yeah, but it's because maybe it'll be different, and who knows? But it's that thing of the I need a distraction, otherwise I will do heroin and go fucking mad.
But yeah, I think you need my 20s, because I think I was sort of there, and so I just stared at a river for like.
But again, if I'd have leapt in you in your 20s, I'd have had a big old week.
I don't think you didn't try.
I'd have had a big old week, and then we'd have got through it. I'd have sorted you in a week. you'd have come to, you're like, why is my hair all straight? I've been down a salon. Yeah, I've got your straight hair, sorted you out, given you a little goatee.
I think what we really need to talk about is what you consider to be a fixed person.
What?
The world as you look at it with everybody fixed is not a world I want to live in.
I just don't believe she wasn't sad. That's the problem.
No, well, I would advise you to watch some, because I can totally agree. Have you watched any, Dan?
Yeah.
You strike me as a man. What did you think? Did you think she was sad?
No, because she was thick.
Oh, flipping hell.
I mean, this podcast is not the title suggests.
No.
It's a real hoodwink, this podcast. I think I've done shows that are more positive than this.
Yeah.
Of course she's happy. She looks happy. But he's right. You're both right. You're right that she's happy and that is enough. You're right. She could have been happier and she'll never know that.
That's the thing, isn't it?
But isn't that winning?
Nobody wins.
That's what I'm driving at. No one bloody wins. So we have to construct ways of tricking ourselves into winning.
I think she won. I think she had a lovely old life.
And the fact that you know that means you win. And that's what it's about. And this is what I'm driving at. It's life is a series of self-invented quests to make yourself ignore the fact that you're dying from the day you're born. I hope you're enjoying this week's Wonderbox. But it's...
Who sponsors this?
Dignitas. But that'd be a job, wouldn't it? Working at Dignitas. I was thinking about the other day in terms of like weird jobs. Like working there. You know those spikes you see outside windows that so pigeons don't land? Making them.
I got some of them.
What?
For my daughter's...
birthday.
She's got like a.
Yeah, exactly.
She asked, is that weird? 5 years old. For a swing set, she's got one of those bowl swings, and the pigeons land on the.
Yeah.
What would you call that? The beam across the top.
Yeah.
And the shit onto the.
Swing.
Onto the swing. So I put some of those on so they don't. They've got all the fencing. I'm not anti pigeon. They can land where they like. Just don't want them shitting on. Where she swings.
So did you make them?
No, I bought them.
But wait, that's what I'm saying. But
you sort of make them because they come... It is satisfying making them because you get like the plastic base plate, which has got two little holes in,
yeah.
And you get the wire and you pinch the wire together and force it through and it goes tick and it clicks in and opens out. It is a satisfying thing to make.
But it's a strange job to sit and make spikes so pigeons can't land.
Yeah, I don't think they're done by hand. I think you picture it as quite a traditional art form.
It would have. At one stage, it would have been.
It would next to the ranch house, there would have been the old pigeon botherer. Yeah. You need to go and see Pigeon Pete.
I mean, we've really got into the specifics of this.
Twisting his spikes.
This is what I like about this show, because you're kind of, you just end up following the brains of the person.
Yeah.
So let's go. We've got Hannah.
Hannah.
Stoic, on her own, happy with...
Knows what she wants.
With her sadness. Then you've got this pub that is destined to fail, but does what it does, and there's an honour to it. They're all similar.
Yeah. All right.
Bielsa sticks to what he knows, sticks to it and does it with artistry. That's what I mean, that they're all very similar.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
The cartoon Bluey.
Okay.
The kids' cartoon Bluey.
I don't know. This is Australian, I think, isn't it?
It's Australian. It's really, really just exceptional work.
Why is that?
Maybe it's that Hannah Hawkswell thing. There's something underneath Bluey that is different to everything that's gone before it. It's animated the same and the voices are the same and all that. So I would say they stand alone as adult. I watch them on my own quite happily because underpinning an episode that is about an annoying toy in the house is something about what it is to be a child or a parent or just alive. Mm. I don't know how they do it. Because now there's about 100, so there's like 3 seasons of it. And my daughter, I may have had like a tangible effect. When she's been ill and we've had to go to A&E or whatever, they make her feel better. Mm. And you can't put a price on that as a parent. That there's a physical effect on her of watching these little things. And then we've had loads of times where we cuddle up in bed and watch them in the morning or stick one on in the afternoon or when we're driving. You know, that someone's created something that has brought all of us. It's why Lee Evans is my favourite comic, because I have a memory of my nan, my mum, my sister and me all laughing the same, all laughing equally hard.
Yeah.
And thinking, what a fucking, I can't do that as a comic.
Yeah. Do you know, I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking specifically of Billy Connolly, but you're so right. I remember you'd get your Lee Evans video for Christmas, and then it was that thing of, shall we all pop it on?
There's a handful of people in my life who, if I just say bags within fucking bags, instantly takes them back to that moment.
Yeah.
And Bluey's got that. The episode where they go to the mum's dad, so it's like about the granddad, and it ends with them on a jetty looking out across a lake, and they're watching the grandkids play. She says to him, God, it's ages since I was here. And he just puts his arm around her and says, no, it's not, darling. It was only yesterday. And it cuts to them when he's the dad and she's... And it's sending the hairs on the back of my neck talking about it. It's like, to do that as part of a kid's cartoon is mind-blowing. Mm. It's because you don't need to. You could have ended the episode 5 minutes ago. It just would have been a funny episode about a bit of chase with a granddad. That is like another level of artistry.
Yeah, it's sort of, isn't there, there's a line from, I think, a Bell and Sebastian, someone goes, no one writes him like they used to, so it may as well be me. And it's that thing when an artist in whatever form chooses to kind of go, right, let's leave everything out on the field and make what is the best cartoon we could make every week. But like you say, if they've done 300 episodes, that is phenomenal. It's a bit like
it's
South
100
Park.
Or so. It's like, I'd say there's about 100.
But it's the same with South Park. It's like, no one watches it as often as they should. But when you watch it, you're like, my God, these guys are still... Yeah.
There's enough old ones that they could just stop and go, that's better than most of what anyone else has done.
Yeah, and you can just tell the difference when you're watching something and you go, God, someone's put everything of themselves in this.
Yeah.
Because that makes, you talking about that makes me want to watch that. You could argue a lot of animation, Life of Pets does it the same, where they're these, the care that's taken over the jokes. And it's not oh, here's one for the dads. It's not like, you know.
Like, but it's also hard to marry that you're talking about, that perfect, where it's intergenerational and it's clean. You know, people say work clean. There's a bit of me that thinks, no, I don't agree with that. When you watch Billy Connolly's bit that always goes viral about the word fuck, and you can say fucking anywhere and everyone knows what you mean. But then when you see something like that and you think, well, it is better. If you can make something that's for everyone, it's better, isn't it?
The thing I have, because I've got a real obsession at the minute with trying not to swear when I do stand-up.
Like, that's hard, though, isn't it?
Really difficult. But
I had to write into the start of my tour and just say, I'm going to swear. When you say, I'm not doing it. I'm just frightened and I swear a lot.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
But that's exactly all it is, because you can always find the words. And like, you can't not swear, particularly if it's the way you talk. I'm quite a sweary person. It just annoys me when I listen back. You're like, you're just putting
awful,
these kind of bluff, just all these kind of unnecessary splodges of paint when you're trying
to. I think now of my daughter watching some of my stuff back and think, oh God.
Yeah.
Grubby. But then it's not. I didn't do it for her. I did it for the... It stands up for the people who are in the room and the adults who watch it, but the thought of her sitting through some of that, fucking, well,
Well, that's the worst fuck. It's when it's...
They tell her to do a spelling hard work, are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking, oh, fucking hell, fucking... That's four. They haven't even said anything.
Yeah, I know.
You've just gone to get a drink.
Yeah.
Awful.
It's weird, but it is. But what the crowd don't realise is what you're actually saying is, help me, help, help.
If I'm silent, they'll leave. That's what it is. If I turn my back to get a drink, I turn around and you've gone. You're saying, he's crap, isn't he?
Well, it's that thing where I've said on stage, fucking, do you know what I mean? No. No idea. Fucking, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What I mean... We're meant to be wordsmiths. But yeah. I've never, ever, ever listened back to an audio recording of me doing stand-up and not written in capitals at the top of that "stop swearing".
Oh, I wish I'd brought my gig book. It's the same thing.
Every comic I know is the same.
Stop fucking swearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in my book so many times.
It's funny, isn't it?
In red ink.
But what were you talking about just before then?
Bluey. Kids cartoons.
So
what I do think about is there's something about kids' TV as well when you're older. When I was really unhappy at uni, I watched a lot of tweenies and I got really into the tweenies because it was on probably at 10 o'clock when I should have gone to my lecture and I couldn't because I couldn't get out of bed. Mm. It became like a real thing to latch onto, and that was like a safe hour because in my head I was like, well, I'm just watching what poorly kids are watching now, so I don't have to think about any of that other stuff because for this hour when the tweenies is on, I'm that feeling when you were a kid and you got the day off and you got to have your packed lunch, but you had it like on the sofa watching kids' telly. There's something very direct about kids' telly because it's so pure, and I still watch stuff from when I was a kid. I've still got old VHSs of the cartoons I used to watch, and as you know.
Well, I remember at the Edinburgh Festival just going into your room and finding you watching Winnie the Pooh. Yeah. And I remember thinking, Jesus Christ.
You still didn't ring my mum. What's fucking wrong with you? Well, I've got a folder full of the quotes you've taken off my kitchen door. But I'm watching Winnie the Pooh in my underpants, drinking vermouth at 20.
Yeah, but you were having a good month. So I didn't, that was it. I was kind of going, well, whatever it takes.
Yeah, he's getting numbers.
But it kind of was that thing where you just, but that was clearly a comfort blanket.
Yeah, well, I met Bob Golding, who did the voice. He was Eric Morecambe in the play Morecambe.
And he's called Goldinger?
Bob Golding.
Oh, right. Oh, fine.
That was an that yeah, was a Bob Golding.
Yeah, I ain't saying he a Goldinger. That's where my brain went to.
Winnie the Pooh is a very interesting reference because I think actually in terms of that dual level thing, probably Winnie the Pooh is quite a good reference point for Bluey in terms of there's a philosophical point underneath. The end of Winnie the Pooh, very sad.
Yeah.
When we leave them in the 100-acre wood forever. That's like a whack. That's a no fucking about end to a kid's story.
I was talking the other day about this with my in-laws. And they were kind of like, because we bought a new house, big mortgage and all that. And they're kind of going, you want to knock out some kids' books. But it is
I get that a lot. it's become the go-to thing, isn't it, for comics?
But there's such talent in writing properly great books for kids. I don't have that talent.
Nor do most of the people we know who are doing it.
But that's what I mean.
What are you doing in their world?
Yeah.
Stay in your lane.
But that's the thing. It's sort of like, it's this weird, shouldn't all be about making money. Like, and it isn't like that. But you don't write stand-up.
No.
Like, the core of it is because we're all chasing that perfect hour, that perfect hour and a half that we are able, without losing ourselves, to make everybody in the room laugh. But you couldn't truly be the comedian John Richardson and make everyone laugh. You could, like, for an hour and a half, there's going to be bits that are a bit too spicy, a bit whatever. But
I think I get further from that.
What do you mean?
Well, I think actually the older I get, the more I just think, oh, that's my niche and I'll stay in that. So I think I'm bluer now and I swear more now.
Yeah.
And that's just because I've accepted my lot. I've given up chasing the perfect hour now. I just think,
No, but you're chasing the perfect hour for you. And I think that's...
Right, I see.
That's my point. It's sort of like... It's so frustrating when people just willfully piss people off. It's like, why... I don't understand doing stand-up just to get that kind of laugh. I hate it. And in a similar way of like... Just writing a book for kids that you shat out. It's just not.
I don't think there's always that. I have to say, because I know we sort of slagged them off. I don't think there's always that cynicism, because I do think, like you're talking about that perfect hour, I do think, especially for comics and actors and people in our world who've then had kids, you do think, oh, imagine, like, I want to be in Bluey because I want my daughter. It's never going to happen because she's already growing out of that kind of thing. But you want to be in the thing so your kid thinks, oh my God, and that's my dad who's in that. Mm. Adam Hills is in an episode of Bluey, and
oh
it's
my
like,
God.
Oh, it's the coolest thing I can imagine to be a voice in Bluey.
Yeah.
So then you think, oh, if I get in a Pixar movie, imagine if I get to take her to a premiere and I go, I'm that incontinent squirrel, that's me. And there's
if there's anyone from Pixar listening, you're not just going to make a seven-year-old girl's dreams come true, but you're going to make my dreams come true too.
I'll pay my own flights. I've said it before. I'll pay my own flights, accommodation.
Good money.
I need one line.
Pixar, it's about time you made a cartoon that's really bleak. And it's about an incontinent squirrel.
The version of Up where they never get the balloons in balance and they just fuck off into space and die in a vacuum. Yeah, that one.
Oh, I'd kill for Ice Age. At least it's all hard. Bloody old fire.
But I do think some of the people who've written kid books I really think, and you get to the end of it and you've signed the deal and it's too late. You've got to release the book. But you're like, oh, I thought for a second maybe I was going to be the next.
It's the assumption that you could do it. That's what, like, it's like, oh, I could do that. What? I could paint that. Could you?
Well, it's because that's the story we tell, isn't it, when someone's selling a book and they say, well, it's actually a story that I just made up for my kids. Someone was putting them, I think, fucking did you? Yeah. Oh, no, I need to up my game. Because I have a puppet that I put her to bed with who farts a lot and is really rude. Oh. And I think, well, that's not.
Where'd you get that idea?
Yeah, that's not.
How did you conjure that act up? A sweary farty man. Is he called Bon? Is he called Baddy?
He doesn't have a name, actually.
What's Baddy up to?
I recently created a supervillain called Diddy Daddy. Ooh, who's me.
A little fella.
On an episode of 8 out of 10 Cats, they knitted like...
Of Diddy Daddy?
It's a joke that's come up every now and again where they do... Well, I call him Diddy Daddy because he's small, because that's the gag, is that I'm small on 8 out of 10 Cats. So I took it home and he sort of kidnaps all her toys when she's at school and sellotapes them to the ceiling and...
It's your elf on the shelf in it all year round.
All year round, yeah. Yeah, just get to trash your own house while she's at school. It's really good fun.
I've only ever met your daughter once. It's funny, isn't it, that you kind of... So my memory of her will probably be forever of just seeing her on the sofa, sat watching telly, and her looking up going, right? And then going back to this, she looks so content.
I hope so.
The other thing that shocked me, your house was a fucking tip. Blew my mind. Blew my mind. When I live with him, there's no way. If I'd have left the kitchen in the state he did, but it also made me think, he's better.
We did. Yeah, I am. I am a bit better. But no,
you are, man.
Cohabit. Yeah. You know, you make choices on compromise.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Things that, you know, aren't worth the argument at the time.
Yeah. But they look like the argument was everywhere.
Maybe we don't need to soak. Yeah. That's what I'm coming to terms with in my 40s. Maybe we don't soak up rinse.
But what I loved as well, there were quotes everywhere for your daughter. It was amazing. In the kitchen, there was like posters with BFG quotes.
Oh, right, yeah. I thought you might have left the Coelho ones off.
No,
drown by falling into water. You only drown if you stay beneath the surface.
But you learn that. You take that when you're a kid. I don't know, there's something really... You know, like if you can't look at quotes when you're a kid and not be inspired by them, but then it's hard to find those bits of wisdom. But if they're in your kitchen, that's brilliant. Like,
if your dad scrawled and pissed across the back door, we bought her these chalk pens. These are phenomenal. If anyone's, I'd say even without kids, rather than have like a notice board or anything like that, you can buy chalk pens like they use in restaurants and just scribble on your windows. It's absolutely brilliant. And you just wipe it off. So if you're going out, instead of hunting around for a piece of paper, you just write across the back door, gone for bread, see you in 20 minutes, cock and balls. It's just a bit of joy for your life.
The older you get, if she's playful, she's going to write, he's kidnapped me.
She's just learned to do backwards letters so that you can see it from outside. So yeah, maybe she is planning something.
What's the final thing? That was full Gary Neville, that.
It's all the trinkets that I have kept and will keep by putting in your box. But I don't know if you're a trinket man. But so from our radio show, for example, I still have in my office the quiz trophy from when we used to do a weekly quiz about the news. Yep. I've still got the Teddy Ruxpin that you bought me. Mm-hmm. I've got a T-shirt that a listener made that says, I've got cats in my wheelie bin, and it's a wheelie bin with a little cat inside it.
Nice.
Got a mug from some listeners in America that they sent in.
Yep.
And that's just that era. And I've got loads. And I really like all of them. I don't want to get rid of any of them. And sometimes I think it's insanity. I think I might be a hoarder. But then I like them and I want to keep all of them.
Oh, I like that. I like the idea of it. I don't have that gift.
I tell you what.
I don't take photos, and I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, because sometimes I've got a really good memory and my brain will remind me of
Yeah, that's definitely right.
But it's a mutator, because that's the problem, that it's gone through my filter. And it's a bit like, you know, that bit in The Simpsons when Homer says he's got a photographic memory and he's kind of really muscular and all the things. Yeah. But so it's a good and a bad thing, because it goes through your prism. Because our dog passed away recently. It was awful. And I'm so glad we got loads of photos of him, like loads. Without those, we wouldn't have those kind of portals back to the memory. And maybe it's the same with kind of trinkets and whatnot. But I also like the fact that your brain every so often goes, remember this? And just takes you back.
Yeah, there's an insecurity to it as well. There's like, if someone's made me something and I don't keep it, that feels like cosmically shitting into the face of the idea of doing something for someone. I think, no, God, that's going to come back on me if I throw this picture of me away. So there's a lot of pictures of me in a folder somewhere that people have sent me. Yeah. It's insane. If anyone finds that, look, fucking clinically insane.
Yeah.
There's a little lever arch file and it's all pencil sketches of me that generally teenage girls have drawn of me. And I think, God, that's like 4 hours of your time.
Yeah.
I can't. If I don't keep that, no one else is going to keep it. I'm not going to fucking give it to anyone.
Yeah.
So I keep them.
But that's so thoughtful of you. And also, you're now going to get a load more paintings.
No, I don't think so. I think those days have gone. That's what I mean about finding your audience.
But it's funny,
though,
isn't it? I
don't think the pencil sketch people are with me anymore.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of them in the Corbyn era. Yeah, I lost a lot. That was a real exodus for me there.
Is there a thing you have, like a trinket, that you're most... What is the first thing you would rescue if the house was on fire?
Family aside.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Is there a bit
It's hard now because there's so much. There's like stuff from football games I've been to. That is the ticket stub from the first time I went to Elland Road.
Mm.
I don't know how to weigh that up against a mug that's got sketches on from 5 different girls in Kansas that used to listen to our radio show. I can still picture it now. It's blue and yellow, the Leeds flags, and they've done Piglet on it because we used to talk about Winnie the Pooh on the radio show. I think, fucking hell, what a thing to have done for someone that you've never met and will never meet, and to get it across the fucking ocean. So what can I ever do with that?
It's a really nice thing to kind of... I think that's... It's debilitating, but for the best.
What's Attenborough got?
What's Attenborough got?
Well, who the fuck am I, with all due respect? Yeah. If you're someone like Attenborough level, his house must be...
Daily, he's getting used knickers.
Yeah. Turtles made out of like, oh, this is my kid's... These are my kid's first teeth, and I made it into a little turtle for you because you love the planet, and that's for my kids. Mm. I hope he hasn't got what I've got. I hope he's like, fucking been that.
Oh, that'd be heartbreaking, wouldn't it? If they ever caught Attenborough on a hot mic.
Put it on the bonfire.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, look at this. Oh, gee. Like, if he accidentally took his mic home and he just opened his fan letter, oh, God. What have the broken biscuits sent me this week?
Here's one piece of plastic that is going in the fucking ocean.
Exactly. Fuck me. Jesus Christ. Oh, to have a fan that wasn't a fucking raggy doll. I think he's on the clock. I think he's fine. Also invented Match of the Day, Attenborough.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot going on with that cat. Yeah. I watched, there was a Shark programme with, is it Steve Backshaw?
Yeah.
Cool. That was all right. He's the heir to Attenborough, I think. I think he gets it. If I was a betting man, it's him or Danny Dyer. Look at that cat.
I think it's left field.
If Danny Dyer ever takes over from Attenborough, I think we're done as a people. You know, I've met him a couple of times. He's really funny and, like, actually nice bloke, but he cannot. Do you know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah, there's but a isn't it more powerful? In a way, haven't we stopped listening to... I'm now making the case for Danny Dyer, but sometimes I don't watch now the Attenborough ones because I sort of get it and I'm like, I can't...
But
you're just
going to
break
man,
my heart. Like, if it's Danny Dyer
but he's
at the Galapagos, I'm watching that.
But if it's
how many of these left? Fucking hell, 7.
Yeah.
You mugs.
But it's like Gordon Ramsay chipping in every so often. Fucking joke. Yeah. What are we talking about? We're talking about hoarding. Is there anything else that nearly made it in?
No, I'm more comfortable slagging things off than praising. So, yeah, I mean, I could have... What were other people's like? Does it come naturally to people to celebrate?
No.
No. But
because it's scary to say the things you like in case people take the piss, which is why British people were so good at... we're so funny because we just take the piss out ourselves.
Yeah.
And then if you leap above the parapet and sort of say, oh, I quite like folk music, but you know that you love it, it's great. But
who do you want on here then who you've not had? You want to put a word in with anyone? I don't know anyone.
I was going to say.
Forget your Patrick Bamford.
No, but I'd like someone like Roy Keane would be interesting. I was watching the Parkinson, there was a documentary about him over Christmas, and I think increasingly we don't have shows where people aren't on flogging something. Like,
yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Amen.
Whenever someone's on telly now, it's to flog. And it's sort of, maybe it's naivety, but when Connolly was on Parkinson or like Muhammad Ali or whatever, they kind of just went on for a chat. And that sort of, the aim was just to kind of have an interesting conversation with somebody. And that's why I like doing this. I kind of like...
You don't have that bit where Graham Norton has to reach into the drawer. Okay, here's your fucking CD then.
Well, that's the thing, but it's a bit like having a chat at a wedding. You know, you don't know everyone. You're sort of sat around the table and oddly talking about what's your favourite crisps.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly everyone gets going and you kind of get to a really interesting place.
Sending shivers down my spine there, though. Well, weddings where you don't know everyone.
Yeah, but...
Social. I went to my friend's wedding in my 20s. And he had a singles table.
Oh.
So I had to sit with just other...
The ghetto.
Single. It was like being on the kids' table. Yeah. The chairs were slightly lower. I couldn't get my head around, all the group of people we were part of were on another table.
Yeah.
But because I made the numbers odd, I had to sit with all these... And they were perfectly pleasant. And they were all thinking what I was thinking, but I'm...
I know.
That's my era there of knowing them.
But it's impossible to complain about that, isn't it? It's that thing when you're... My wife often says that to me if we go to a wedding, because I can't hide my contempt at the table. Like, if I see a happy, big, bubbling, laughy table, I'm...
Yeah, you want to be at the table where they're playing, betting on the speeches and all that, don't you?
All the fun tables, and then you just... And I love a wedding. I just... Best man speeches, I adore them. I love it because it's the one... I don't know if you've... I've never been to a wedding where... The best man hasn't spoken to me beforehand and I get to be useful.
Oh, really?
And yeah, totally.
What do you say that's useful then? Because I never say anything useful.
Tell the story and tell it well. Tell the story, tell it well.
That's horrible.
No.
Just be funny and don't
Do you know
what I did last night? 2 hours.
No,
I didn't know any of them.
Listen,
so you could easily do an hour.
Everyone here loves you. Everyone wants you to win.
Yeah, I say that.
Just tell the story, tell it well. Whatever you're going to do, just... Go at it, and it will be brilliant.
And then they're doing 2 hours.
Drink more wine.
Yeah, absolutely. Get hammered. If there's a story that you think is too blue, it isn't.
No. Exactly. Exactly.
Don't look at that table. Tell it with confidence and look at us. Yeah, we're laughing. Fuck them.
Cock out, no burner. It's one of my favourite moments in life. And that's what I mean about I don't need a photo to go back. A photo can't convey the journey that you had in 1 minute when Seamus, who was at your wedding, was grabbing everybody and taking them to a dance floor and making them dance, even though they didn't want to dance. And then John looking at me and sort of going, if that bastard comes near me, I shall give him he can try and grab me and he can try. And then this hand just appeared on him. And suddenly, Seamus grabbed John and he was on the dance floor dancing. You can't get that in a photo. You gave in so easy.
I should give him a, okay, hi, sure, all right, bloody hell. Okay, rough man in the land. Here we go. Ding, ding, diddly, diddly, do.
I was crying, man. Like,
if he's doing it to me, he's not doing it to someone else. I took one for all of you that day.
That's okay, but that's...
That was my leaping in front of the bus to save the kid. That's what that was.
It was so, but it was because you were so definite.
There's no bloody way. And okay, no, here we go.
He was do-si-do-ing you like a good one.
That's the best bit of the wedding, when the dance floor opens and it trims the herd, doesn't it? All the dancers go.
Yeah.
You see them at dinner, they're like itching. You're like, the play area opens in a minute, you can go. And then just the drinkers, just by the bar. Just a series of nonsense in it, movement.
That's the best bit about the wedding, isn't it? It's when you're in that, you're not quite shit-faced. You're just on the edges of drunk. And there's just conversation and silliness and cheese and everyone's drunk and... Oh, to the window, to the wall, to the sweat drips off my balls. That was really good fun, that, John.
Really you ended fun. On that, are you?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
That's the only song I could end it with.
What is that song?
I don't know, I only know that bit. Ladies and gentlemen, John Richardson. So there you go, that was John. Now, we should say specifically, John is a patron of the children's mental health charity Bright Young Dreams, and this year they're campaigning to raise £5 million. So if you want to donate or find out more, go to www.brightyoungthings.com. See you next week.